I just wanted to make sure that Bob didn't have my notes. I tell you, he knows how to keep singers honest. But I say Queen handled that with great aplomb. She did a great job, didn't she? That's right. Well, that's super. Well, it's good to be with you this evening. This really is my home. We've lived in Colorado Springs since I first came to the Air Force Academy in 1964. I've had a couple absences, one with the Air Force sending me elsewhere, and then one with the Navigators sending me to the Pacific Northwest for some while. You know, as we look back on 1986, I suppose that two things are going to be remembered from this year. One, of course, is the Challenger accident that took the lives of those astronauts that has shaken us up so badly. And probably another is going to be this Iran situation. It's interesting, isn't it, how tragedy always sticks in our minds more than almost anything else. I'm a little bit amused sometimes at what Congress is doing right now, discussing all of this. Everybody's very up in arms, and I remember a quote from Will Rogers, and he said something like this: Congress is so strange. A man gets up to speak and says nothing. Nobody listens, and everybody disagrees. And I think that's probably what's happening a little now. Everybody, in fact, when they started televising some of the congressional sessions, I understood it, the whole of Congress underwent a wardrobe change. They were trying to figure out what kind of shirts showed up on TV and red ties were supposed to look better. And, you know, it's as though things weren't really to be done, but more to be seen. Are any of you from the Air Force Academy by any chance? Any of you stationed out there? My goodness, that's unusual for us not to have some. How many, anybody from the military in Fort Carson and other places? Great. Well, it's good to have you here. We appreciate just the opportunity to open up Glen Eyrie to you all. And, of course, it's a landmark in this area. And we really want to serve the community. I don't think there's a young elementary school student who hasn't been through this castle on a tour here in Colorado Springs. Thinking of the military a little bit, and by the way, I just want to mention that I'm new in this job as General Director of the Navigators, having taken it from Lawrence Sanny in June of this year, and I saw a story about a fellow who had just been assigned to guard duty in one of the military bases, a security policeman. And they said, don't worry about anything. It's very simple. All you have to do is only let the people through the gate who have a sticker on their car. He says, I got it. And the first, wouldn't you know it, the first person to come through the gate was a general in a staff car. Now, nobody told him the staff cars did not need stickers. So he stopped them and says, sir, I'm sorry, you can't go through. And the general said to his driver, driver, go right on through. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And he says, sir, you cannot go through. You don't have a sticker on your car. And the general said again, drive right on through. Don't pay any attention to him. And so finally the guard went to the back window and knocked on the window, and general rolled it down. He says, general, sir, I'm sorry. He said, I'm new at this. Who do I shoot, you or the driver? Now, I think that got his attention, and he probably decided to make another try at it. You know, when we think about sharing what Christmas is all about, we want to tell the truth. I read how some communists tell jokes. They even have jokes on themselves. And if you've ever been around anyone from an Eastern European country, you know that they do tell a lot of jokes on themselves. And here's one that I thought I'd share with you because it sort of relates to what we're going to be talking about this evening. One joke about Marxism goes like this. They asked three questions and give three answers. The first question is, what is philosophy? And the answer is searching in a dark room for a black bed. Then the question is, what is Marxism? That's searching in a dark room for a black bed that isn't there. But then the third question is, what is Marxism-Leninism? They said, that's searching in a dark room for a black bed that isn't there and shouting, I found it! Now, as I talk tonight, I hope that I'm not going to shout, I found it, about something that doesn't actually exist. You know, when I think of the Challenger accident, And having been involved in the space program so much in my own life, it hit me very closely. One of my classmates, when I went to get a master's degree, or one of the fellows going to our school, was one of the astronauts, Roger Chaffee, who was killed in that earlier accident down at Cape Kennedy when it exploded on the pad. And it touches everybody. But everybody who has ever flown or been involved in the space program has to say, we knew that there was this risk. Life is filled with risks. Now, when something like that happens, everybody runs to cover their own heads, and it takes a long time to find out their truth. Nobody ever wants to admit they're wrong. You see this in the Iran incident. You saw it in Watergate. You saw it in the Challenger accident. Nobody ever wants to admit that they're wrong. But I've found that whether it's in the space business or politics or even religion, the commodity that we really need and want most is integrity. We want people who, when they say something, that they mean what they say and that it will be true. Shopping at Christmas is a risk. You don't know what to believe. You know, some of those things have a half-life of about 30 seconds with no return policy on it, but everything is a risk. What we wish is that we could ask somebody a simple question and know that what they tell us is the truth. In my background, I have found that is often not the case. I can remember when I was a mission controller at Cape Kennedy. I remember one evening I was working our mission control station, and we were running a whole bunch of tests simultaneously, not launches, but ground tests. And we had a Polaris submarine out running a dry run on a Polaris launch in the early days of the Polaris program. And they kept having these delays, and you see them on all the time, you know, 30 minutes and holding, and they may hold for half an hour, whatever. Well, that happens all the time. They got a problem, and you've got to fix it. My job was to find out how long I could let them hold without destroying the rest of our schedule on the range and telling them that they had to leave and reschedule for another test at another time. And what was happening was a Navy commander was telling me, oh, we'll have it fixed in just a few minutes. 5 more minutes and we'll have the problem fixed. What he didn't know is that I had a back line of communications down the range and knew that he was lying. We knew that they were not going to get it fixed that night. They'd be lucky to get it fixed in a day. And so he was just baldly lying to me. And so knowing that, after a certain amount of time, I finally said, Commander, you're off the range. That's it. You're done. And he got so angry and so mad, and I ended up in the commander's office the next morning for defending it. It is not often that a second lieutenant gets to tell a commander that he's kicked off the range. But in the job, you had the authority. And I was right, because he was lying to me. Or I recall another incident out here at the Air Force Academy. One summer, during what they call Beast Summer, basic cadet training, we had a group of cadets out in Jack's Valley. And the rule was you couldn't have alcohol there in the tents. And an officer caught a kid with alcohol in his tent. And he just chewed him up one side and down the other. He said, now listen, don't ever let me catch you with that again. I'm going to let you off this time, but don't ever let it happen again. 3 months later, after the classes began, the same cadet was caught with alcohol in his room, and so he was confronted. And he said, but Major so-and-so let me get away with it last summer. Within 24 hours, that major was fired from the academy, was packed up and leaving, because he was not a man of integrity. We need integrity. That honor code and everything that goes on out at Glen Eyrie is critical to the functioning of the system. Have you ever wondered why they have so much trouble with the honor code at the academy? And I was there through 2 honor scandals. The problem is that you're trying to impose a Christian system on a non-Christian environment. And there's only one way to do it, and that's by law. Because no one will do it out of their hearts, as much as we would like to. And I'm reminded of a statement that was made by a man by the name of David Russell. He said that we live in a Newtonian world, of Einsteinian physics ruled by Frankensteinian logic. And sometimes I think that's the way we do it. I like what General Omar Bradley, one of our few five-star generals in our history, he said this: "We have grasped the mystery of the atom and rejected the Sermon on the Mount. The world has achieved brilliance without wisdom, power without conscience. Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants." What makes a man honest or ethical? Ultimately, you see, law is the only thing that can control us externally. But what is it somehow that gets inside a person and makes them make right, honest decisions? My proposal to you tonight is that there is something that I would call, out of my own background in missiles and space, an internal guidance system. And I think all of you hear about guidance system. That is what governs the path of all of these missiles, all of these spacecraft. There's a guidance system internally that causes them to turn on the power, turn it off, to go one way and to go to another. If you did not have that, it would be a complete flop. In fact, that is probably the major issue in all of our space shots. And I would like to propose to you that man needs an internal guidance system that tells them where to go and what to do. I'd personally like to just share with you a little of my own personal guidance system. A lot of you have prayed. Back when I was at Cape Canaveral, I began to pray. And the thing I began to pray, and I don't have any idea how this came into my mind, but while I was down there, I started praying that God would lead me to the Air Force Academy to teach, and so that I could have a ministry and influence the lives of young men. Now, that almost seemed to be an impossible task. I didn't have a master's degree. It was highly competitive and so forth. So I applied to the Air Force, and I asked them if they would send me back to graduate school. And they wrote back and said, "You're qualified, but we don't send lieutenants to graduate school." So the answer is no. So Mary and I waited another year, and we decided we'll try one more time and see whether or not they let us go. And if not, I'll have spent my X years in the military and get on about an engineering and scientific career. Well, we applied again, and I heard nothing. But in the meantime, I got a cable from Washington, D.C., down into our base in Florida, asking that I come up to our command headquarters at Andrews Air Force Base. And at that time, I had no idea what it was for. My boss didn't know what it was for. No one on my base knew what it was for. But I got up there, and the personnel officer told me what was going on. He said, "Listen, we're going to have a conference of full colonels and brigadier generals, the directors of personnel at all the major commands around the Air Force. And they are going to be discussing the topic of how to get junior officers to stay on active duty in the Air Force." He said, "Now, frankly, these guys have been senior officers for so long, they don't have any idea what they're talking about. We would like a young officer to give a speech at that particular conference and tell them what junior officers want today. And we'd like you to do that." And so I said, "Well, do you realize that I'm not a career officer?" "Yeah, we know that." "And do you realize, and can I say anything I want?" They said, "You can say anything you want." So I accepted the job, but I said, "By the way, I made an application to go back to school. Do you have any idea where that thing is?" "It's my command headquarters." So we went trotting down to the personnel office, and there I found it, in the bottom drawer of a sergeant's desk. And so I asked him, "What is it doing in the bottom drawer of your desk? He said, "Well, very simple," he says, "you have not been in your assignment for 3 years, and therefore we are not going to let you go." I said, "Okay," and we walked out of his office, and this personnel officer said, "Listen," he said, "let me go pull some strings. I know the guy who invented all of the Air Force's education programs." I said, "No, wait a minute." He said, "I'm a Christian. I believe that God answers prayer, and I just as soon not do that. So let's just let it go." And so I didn't do anything. I figured if God wanted me there, it would happen. And so I went back down, wrote my speech, came back a month later, gave the speech. As I gave the speech, which was well received, I walked off the podium, and a colonel came up to me, said, "Lieutenant, if you'd ever like to teach at the Air Force Academy, get in touch with me." Now, nobody even had any idea. I mean, I had told nobody that that was what I had prayed about. That same night, I went to a banquet at the closing of this conference, and an old white-haired colonel, I'm sure he'd been a colonel for about 40 years, came through afterwards, and he shook my hand and said, "Lieutenant, I hope you have a good school tour," and I was off to school within a matter of 2 months. Now, see, does God answer prayer? Yeah, I think God does answer prayer. But where did all that start? How did I know that God would answer prayer? Well, I go back to having been born in a little tiny town in Iowa. It had 100 people, 3 street lights, a beer joint, a grain elevator, and a lumber yard, and my cousins own all of them right now. And it has not grown since. And everybody in town, of course, went to the little Lutheran church. I had no idea it was a Lutheran church. It was, of course, a Scandinavian community, and I didn't have any idea what kind of church it was. But then my parents, when I was just a matter of a few months old, got divorced. And when I was 9 years old, my mother remarried, and we left that little cozy town of 100 people and went out to a metropolis of Spokane, Washington, where, having come from a one-room schoolhouse where I had 3 kids in my grade, I went to a school where there were more kids in my third grade than there were in my entire school in Iowa, and I was one shook-up kid. It really disturbed my entire life. I became introverted. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to meet anybody. I was scared. Half the time, I didn't want to go to school, and some of you have gone through things like that. But there in this little community I was in, a post-war, World War II housing project, there was a businessman by the name of Bob Shepler. And he, with another group of businessmen, not pastors, businessmen, they decided that they needed to put a little Sunday school out in this housing project where I lived with my folks. And someone one day talked me into going to Bob's class. And that was an experience. He ran it like a boot training camp. But Bob was quite a guy. I'd never seen anybody like him. On Sundays, he would take his Bible and he would teach us. I can still remember stories that he shared with us. But over a period of about a year or two, it became very clear to me that what the scriptures had to say was true. And he kept sharing things about how we had sin. And I knew that from the way I was living. That was no mystery to me. But I realized the Bible said that that separated me from God. And he also told us about Christ, how Christ had died for that sin. And I can remember going through Christmas programs and Easter programs and all of this, and all of the truth began to clarify to me. Now, I didn't make decisions very fast. I think it took about a year to 2 years of my being involved with Bob and watching his life, because he was a different kind of guy. He was a tough businessman. I could tell you about how tough he is right through to today. And he yet gave himself to a bunch of wild junior high kids. And in that process, I came to understand what it meant to be a Christian instead of being just religious. And coming back from one of those outings one night, one of the college kids who was helping Bob asked if any of us would like to become a Christian, to ask Christ to come into our lives and give us eternal life. And I said, "I'd like to do that." And I knew exactly what happened in my life that night. I knew, having thought it over, having wrestled with it, that I was making a change that would last for a lifetime. In fact, I can remember going in and telling my parents. They thought it would be a phase that would pass. Since then, they have all come to know Christ also. But I found out that the real gift of Christmas was Christ himself. And that installed my inner guidance system. I cannot explain it. But from that time on in my life, changes started taking place that turned me from an insecure, scared, upset, emotionally upset child, young person, to a growth that allowed me to be confident in knowing what I was doing and to be successful at what I did. And that had nothing to do with me. It had to do with the fact that I believe an internal guidance system was installed in my heart and my life at that time. And Bob has been a counselor and a guide to me for all of these years. Every time I go back to Spokane, the one man I see besides my parents is Bob Shepler, because of the influence that he had in my life. He introduced me into a good church. He got me involved with the Navigators, actually introduced me when I went to college to some of the people that were involved in Christian things, and it guided my life for a long time. Now, from that point, my life has never been the same in terms of marriage, in terms of my children, in terms of my view of life. I read an article, one of those little things in Personal Glimpses in the Reader's Digest about 3 or 4 years ago, and it was about the author William Saroyan. And he once wrote this, that the best part of man stays forever. But he died in May of 1980. But before he died, after a 2-year bout with cancer, 5 days before he was going to be hospitalized in April, he telephoned the Associated Press and gave them a statement to report to the people that cancer had spread to his vital organs. And then he gave this final statement to be read after his death. And this is the statement. Everybody has got to die, but I've always believed an exception would be made in my case. Now what? That was the simple statement that he made. Now what? That is a great question. But I believe it can be answered once and for all only in a relationship to Jesus Christ. I was just reading a couple days ago in the Gospel of Luke where Christ said, "Who do men say that I am?" I'm not sure people are asking that question all the time, even around Christmas. But the people said, "Oh, some say you're John the Baptist who's come back from the dead. Others say you're Elijah, that old prophet. Some just say you're some prophet." Then he said, "But who do you say that I am?" And Peter answered and said, "You are the Christ of God, the Messiah." And that is who we celebrate at Christmas. But the fact of Christ existing has nothing to do with whether or not Christ lives in our hearts. I was just having a little Bible study this morning with a very outspoken non-Christian. And early this morning, he looked at John 3:16 that said, "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life." He said, "Who said that?" Well, we went back and wrestled around in the Bible a little bit and found the quotes. He said, "Jesus said it." "You mean he said that about himself?" "Yeah," he said. And he said, "Well, then God, he said that God, his Father, sent him for people." And we wrestled through that very, very familiar verse. And he asked, "Is that the only proof you have?" I said, "No, it's not the only one, but that's a direct statement by Jesus Christ." Now, as you wrestle with things about Christmas and Christianity, a lot of people say, "Well, I really need to be honest and look at the evidence." That's my friend this morning. And I love what Winston Churchill said. He says it's a very fine thing to be honest, but it's also very important to be right. And that is a sobering thought. Winston Churchill also said that only faith in a life after death in a brighter world where dear ones meet again, only that and the measured tramp of time can give consolation. And I would like to encourage you tonight to think about what life is all about. And when we all come to the point of saying, "Now what?" that we will know what that really is. As I look back on my years in the space business, it allows zero room for error. But neither does life. There is no room for error. And when we talk about becoming a believer in this Christ of Christmas, it is truly a matter of life and death. And I would encourage you to investigate that Christ. Now, in your chairs is a little card that says, "Welcome to Glen Eyrie." And what we would like to do is simply to give you an opportunity, if you would like to get involved in for 4 or 5 weeks in a small, informal Bible study, not to twist your arm, but just to investigate things about Jesus Christ and some of the things that I've shared. You could mark that, or if you'd like to know about some future coffees and opportunities here at the Glen, because we have these affairs 3 or 4 times a year that are open to the public. But if you'd like to just be contacted, not to commit to one, but just to be contacted to find out if you'd like to be involved in a small group like that. Would you just fill that out? And then when you're finished, there are going to be some baskets somewhere, I was told. Where are they, Bob? Pardon me? Oh, okay, up there, hidden in the bushes. Right up on both, there they are, not hidden in the bushes. And just slip those, or give them to any of the staff you see around with a name tag. If you want to ask some questions about it, you don't have a card. Well, here is one right here. Did anybody else not have a card? We've just got some extras. And they'll have some as you exit here in a little bit. Well, I appreciate your being patient and listening to me share some things. And you may say that is impossible for me to think about at this point in my life. And I love what's an old Chinese proverb. Man who say it cannot be done should not interrupt man doing it. You can study the scriptures, and I hope that you'll have some motivation to do so. And if we can be of any help in that regard, many of us go to many different churches here in town. We're not trying to push any one. We just want to help you get in the scriptures personally. Welcome to Glen Eyrie and have a great evening.